icebreaker. And Shell's permit requires that this icebreaker be on site. Shell left Seattle with its rigs last month, got up to the Arctic. They're under enormous time pressure because there's only a certain number of weeks that the region is ice-free. In 2012, when Shell went up there, it was a disaster, and they crashed, and their contractor got charged with 8 felonies. And this time, they have promised that they are safety-obsessed and Shell-ready. Yet this icebreaker, which was up in Alaska just last week, ran into something and got a 39-inch hole in its hull. So it is down here now getting repaired on a tight
Annie Leonard,
tight
we have 5 seconds. Can President Obama do anything about this now?
Absolutely. He can deny that last permit and take a stand for climate solutions. Absolutely.
Annie Leonard, thank you for being with us, standing by the bridge where Greenpeace activists have formed an aerial blockade. Annie Leonard, executive director of Greenpeace USA. And that does it for our broadcast, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Laura Gattis, Dean Ardina Guster, Amy Littlefield, Noreen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Caron, Steve Martinez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Our website's democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the MLK Dream Run, the weekend of August 1st and August 2nd. The 5, 10, and 15K runs will take you through the charming and historic retail, residential, and parkscapes of the Seoul District. The run and weekend events include music, food, and entertainment after the run and exist to honor Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech delivered in Washington, D.C., August 1963 during the March for Jobs and Equality. Again, that's the MLK Dream Run, the weekend of August 1st and 2nd at the corner of Northeast Martin Luther King and Alberta in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the summer concert in Dawson Park, featuring a live performance by Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. The mission of Summer Concerts in the Park is to bring cultural diversity to metropolitan area residents. Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band play a full range of popular and traditional salsa, son cubano, timba, and tropical styles as cumbia, merengue, y bachata. Again, that's the summer concert in Dawson Park with Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. Dawson Park is located at North Stanton and North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information about ticket prices and directions can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor, along with North Portland Community Building Group, Proper, of the We Can Do It Together community concert. Local politicians, community activists, faith groups, and artists will join in a day of unity, song, and prayer in Kenton Park on Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. This concert will feature a variety of local artists that will rally for unity in this time of unrest. Again, that's the We Can Do It Together community concert, Saturday, August 8th from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Kenton Park at North Kilpatrick and Delaware in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
They're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go, and the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go. Well, they gave me some beans for my
good morning. You are listening to KBOO. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. My name is Paul Rowland. And that was Johnny Cash. And that sort of fits. Actually, we'd meant to bring up another song. Somehow that didn't quite work out. But we are counting down the time very dramatically. So that actually was a very appropriate song. Had meant to play Burning Down the House. But, you know, the apocalypse is upon us. And we are on the gallows. And we're going to be talking about a lot of efforts to forestall the hanging, collective hanging here. And some people are dangling from a bridge, the St. John's Bridge, to forestall climate apocalypse right as we speak. And we're going to be getting a report back from them in just a few minutes. That's, as you heard at the tail end of Democracy Now!, Portland made it onto Amy Goodman's show and with some 13 climbers. That's pretty amazing. This is a serious direct action. And I don't know if, I guess there's people out on kayaks. We'll hear a full report back on the status of the Shell icebreaker, whether it's made it out of dry dock, what the plan is, and what's happening out on the river. And I was out there at Cathedral Park yesterday. A lot of people out there, a lot of people prepared to put their bodies on the line for our precious planet and its precious climate. And coming up this Sunday will be another great event at Cathedral Park, the Willamette River Revival, to celebrate the Lower Willamette River and its cleanup from noon to 6 p.m. That's out under the St. John's Bridge, where people are hanging off of. As I said, right now, there's going to be traditional Native American crafts, live bluegrass, environmental fair, storytelling, kayak demo, children's activities, science demos, walking tours, food and drink vendors, fishing demos, and more. And a salmon bake hosted by the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. And Kristen, KBOO's own Kristen Yount, will be talking to several guests about that event coming up in 3 hours here on KBOO. So stay tuned this morning for all that and more. Just want to flag a couple of articles before we get to Meredith Cokes out on the river. There's a lot of signs of dramatic happenings on our planet. Beneath Alaskan wildfires, a hidden threat, long frozen carbon thaw. Our worst fears are being realized. These fires burning in interior Alaska, where there's ordinarily not a lot of forest fires, ordinarily that the permafrost holds that at bay to a lot of extent. There's a lot more moisture generally, but everything's drying out. And these fires are burning into this feet-deep duff layers, the built-up organic matter, and burning and releasing. It's another form of stored carbon along with the bogs and the peat underneath large swaths of Siberia and Alaska. As the permafrost thaws out, that is being released. But these deep duff layers, which have never really burned, are burning. And that's not good. Another reason to get active. And these fish kills. Hot water kills half of Columbia River sockeye salmon. Drought and record heat are behind the high water temperatures. I heard there it's up to 80 degrees on the Willamette River a couple weeks ago. It's dramatic. More than 250,000 sockeye salmon returning from the ocean to spawn are either dead or dying in the Columbia River and its tributaries due to warming water temperatures. So if you're not too beaten down by this overwhelming news, it's time to get active. And there are people getting active. One of them is here in the studio with us today, Alex Harris, with another campaign coming up in less than a month called Hike the Pipe. And we're going to be talking to Alex. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning.
After we talk to Meredith. So, Steve, could you ring Meredith up for us? Steve, our great engineer for all of morning talk radio, except for Friday, for years and years. He's been doing this, getting up at some ungodly hour to download Democracy Now! And bring it to you and coordinate the phone calls for talk radio. We thank him so much for that. And yes, I don't know if anybody has heard or not, but if you can get out there and support them out to the Cathedral Park where people are masked and waiting to see what happens with the attempt to do a dangling blockade of the Shell icebreaker, the Fennica icebreaker in the Vigor shipyard at Swan Island for repair this week. Of course, that is involved in Shell's insane idea of going into the Arctic, along with all the other insane fossil fuel ventures around the planet, like the tar sands, the gas fracking, the liquefied natural gas, which would take frack gas from the Colorado Basin and pipe it all the way to the Oregon coast, which is what we'll be talking with Alex about in just a few minutes. And we'll also be having from the phone, this is going to be a full show, Patrick Mazza from, I believe he's in Seattle. He'll be talking about a remarkable court decision that just came down in King County based upon a youth lawsuit on the public trust doctrine. And we'll be talking about that in about 20-25 minutes. So, Meredith, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. How are you doing after a long night, I imagine?
Good morning. I'm doing really well. I'm a bit sleep-deprived after spending the night awake down here on the waterfront, Cathedral Park.
So tell us the dynamics. What's the status of this Fennica icebreaker, and what's going on the St. John's Bridge?
Yeah. A couple different things. Well, the Fennica, as you might know, docked in Portland on Saturday night in the wee hours of the morning, and we had reason to believe that Shell's icebreaker was going to be leaving Portland this morning very early, roughly 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. in the morning. So a group of a lot of different community groups called out for a public vigil on both land and water to hold space during the time that the icebreaker might be moving, and also giving people the opportunity to choose if they wanted to engage in civil disobedience and put themselves in front of the ship. So we had a lot of people come out yesterday throughout the day and more into the evening. And yeah, we were here all night long, and we launched onto the water about 50 people launched onto the water, mostly in kayaks, at roughly 3:30 in the morning, and we stayed on the water until roughly 6:30 in the morning. So it's about 3 hours on the morning, or I'm sorry, 3 hours on the water. And meanwhile, a group of 13 climbers with Greenpeace, actually, unbeknownst to people that were down here in the park,
that's great,
rappelled from the bridge and are currently dangling. They're supported with like hammocks to sit in and food and supplies that they need to hang out and maintain this blockade from the undercarriage of the bridge for as long as they need to.
Awesome. It's the cavalry has arrived, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it kind of felt like that.
So what's the status of the Fennica, do you know?
Right, so back to the Fennica. The Fennica is still in dock. You can't actually see it when you're on land at Cathedral Park, but when we were out on the water, you could see it. You know, like I said, they were hoping to leave the port in the wee hours of the morning, and so far we have successfully delayed them. They're not even on the river yet. They're still dry docked up on Swan Island.
Uh-huh.
And we've heard rumors of an estimated new departure time of 10 a.m., but so far there's still 13 you know, lives dangling on the river in front of them, and I don't see any like meaningful attempts right now by law enforcement that to extract those people. So I think 10 a.m. seems like quite an unrealistic departure time for the ship.
So you think the climbers or the danglers are actually in a position to block the vessel?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely what they're doing right now. And, you know, the 50 kayaks on the water earlier were doing the same when we were out there. So, the climbers are absolutely in the way of the vessel's path. I also heard, and I should emphasize that the climbers dangling off the bridge are not an action that I am affiliated with. So I don't know the full details, but I did hear that they're currently blocking the Fennica, the icebreaker. However, they're going to climb up and allow other marine traffic through as the day goes on. So they're not going to be blocking the other large ships and whatnot that might be trying to come up and down the Willamette.
So I wonder if they could sort of piggyback on some other ship and get through somehow. Anyway, that's all speculation at this point. So what are you asking people to do? Is there still need for people to come out there and support what's going on?
There is. There's people that are in the park. A lot of people are leaving to go home and have some and catch a cat nap, or of course some people have to go to work or whatnot, but there was just a debrief and meeting on shore where organizers and the attendees of the event discussed different possibilities for the day. And it seems like there's a lot of energy among the folks that are down here to maintain a presence both in the park and also to get back on the water when the time comes to help keep the Fennica stalled in port.
And you're saying there hasn't been much law enforcement presence? Any sign of people trying to, you know, get people out of the park, or any sign of law enforcement at all?
No, we've been in touch with local law enforcement and with the Coast Guard. So far, they've been respectful of our protests. We were able to stay in the park overnight without harassment, which was very nice. So far I think the law enforcement presence has been really concentrated on the bridge.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Sarah, so much for that. Meredith Cox from the Portland
absolutely.
Rising Tide. Go get some sleep, and maybe we'll be talking to you later on.
Okay.
All right. And again, that was Meredith Cox from the Portland Rising Tide. And there are a number of groups involved in this action, as you heard here. Greenpeace just sort of came out of the blue with this action to support all the other actions going on there. And again, it's out at Cathedral Park, which is out there in St. John's, underneath the St. John's Bridge, a Portland treasure, and now a base camp. So with that, I'll move to our next spot on this climate action special today. We've got Alex Harris, as I mentioned. So Alex, tell us about Hike the Pipe.
Hike the Pipe is another project similar to other activist projects that are going on in the state and throughout the West Coast that is trying to stop fossil fuel infrastructure from being constructed in the 21st century. We strongly believe that so far our government hasn't responsibly managed our land and responsibly built our infrastructure to make our economy and our society sustainable. So we're trying to mitigate these problems by stopping the further construction of infrastructure projects. The hike is a 232-mile protest along the proposed pipeline route of the Pacific Connector Pipeline, which will take liquefied natural gas basically from the fracking fields of
It won't be liquefied until it gets to the...
That's correct. So it will be in gas form all the way until it hits Klamath Falls. This gas will be coming from Canada and the Intermountain West. And once it comes to Klamath Falls, it currently has no pathway to the Pacific Ocean and to the Asian markets. So this pipeline they'd be building would be connecting Klamath Falls to Coos Bay, 232 miles of clear-cut dredging of rivers, property being taken from landowners. And once the gas gets to Coos Bay, it will be liquefied and sent to China.
You say will. I always try to use the conditional in these cases. So I think it's a good habit.
That's definitely a good habit.
Would be.
I apologize.
Could be, might be, won't be. Anyway, so obviously there's been a lot of, we've covered this story quite a bit on KBOO. I've done a show on it myself. We've covered it on the news, some of the hearings that have gone on. We've talked to the landowners involved. We've talked to activists in both in Portland and Coos Bay. And this is an ongoing thing. This is a latest phase. So how did you get involved in this?
I graduated from the University of Oregon about a year and a half ago. I was at the environmental conference down at the University of Oregon Law School. And I ran into some old friends of mine from Ashland. They were landowners that were affected by the pipeline. And
is that where you're from?
I'm from Ashland. Okay. Yeah, I grew up in the Cascade Mountains just outside of Ashland, where the pipeline actually crosses. Ah. So the same road that I grew up on, Dead Indian Memorial Road, is...
Dead Indian Memorial Road?
It's the name of the road.
Oh, my God.
Southern Oregon has a rich history of racism and violence, and you would never think about it because it's such a beautiful place. But
yeah, and Ashland's just such a cute...
It is very cute. But I grew up there, and this issue just hit home for me once I found out that these forests and these mountains and these rivers that I grew up recreating in and discovering myself in were now threatened by an infrastructure project condoned by our federal government to basically just give more excuses to frack more in our country and burn more fossil fuel.
So I just can't let this go. So have there been attempts to rename this Dead Indian Memorial
Road? It used to be Dead Indian Road. And when I was a kid, it was...
I mean, I hate to laugh about it. It's terrible. It just took me aback. It's like it's an awful history that is not a laughing matter. And anyway, that's shocking. So we shall continue here. And of course, that the history of the dispossession of the tribes of Southern Oregon is a terrible, terrible history, and sets some of the backdrop for this. Of course, it was necessary to first do that in order to have these territories colonized. It can now be sort of recolonized. That's the kind of way I look at a lot of this fossil fuel development, is kind of a recolonization. So like the settlers, us, who came in and benefited from the dispossession of the lands from the native peoples, in some ways, in much less, intense way, are suffering some of the same dynamics now. Mm. That's kind of how I look at it.
Mm. When land's being taken from residents, when property's being mismanaged, when the people are no longer stewards over or a part of the ecosystems that they're surrounded by, I see some kind of colonization going on as well.
So so this Hike the Pipe, who's involved in this?
Well, I'm the only paid organizer. I've been working on this for about 5 months. But I have a few dozen young people ranging from high school age to mid-40s willing to participate in the hike itself. Then I have a large swath of people that are actually participating in the events going on. So there will be 4 events along the hike that correspond to when hikers come through communities. There will be 1 event in each county affected. So Klamath, Jackson, Douglas, and Coos counties are all counties affected, and we'll be hosting 1 community event in each town. And a few of the towns will be actually doing direct action training sessions. We'll be interacting with landowners and the communities in these rural areas and building some movement infrastructure for the future. We figured one of the biggest problems surrounding the LNG issue is the lack of solidarity amongst groups. There are a lot of people working on this. We just have yet to really be talking all on the same page and coordinating our efforts. So to connect the urban environmentalist centers to the rural activist bases is my project, to build those relationships with the people and the land that's directly affected is something that's desperately needed and something that hasn't been done yet.
That sounds great. That's kind of the, from my involvement over the years, that's sort of like been a dream, and a long, long discussion of activists is to do exactly that kind of work. And this, unfortunately, these kind of massive infrastructure projects present the perfect opportunity to bring people together if we can take that seriously and do it. And it sounds like you all are. So I guess there's people coming from all over the place, mostly younger people, or people are doing it, like some people doing the whole hike, some people doing sections.
Right. So there are 5 sections, and there's actually, there are a lot of opportunities to plug in on different lengths of sections. So some of the sections are actually short, 4 to 5 days long, 6 to 7 miles a day. Some of the sections are a little longer. So we'll actually get a broad and wide, you know, very diverse group of people hiking the pipe, which was my goal. I didn't want it to be a homogenous, you know, group of people that all talked the same language and all had the same ideas about environmentalism. I wanted this hike to be a good excuse to interact with new narratives and to challenge our old approaches, because that's the only way we're going to be building unity. It's by changing our current narratives. If we maintain that our narrative is predominant over everyone else's, we can't build those relationship ties that are necessary for solving a problem like this. So that kind of diversity in the project itself is going to help its success.
So I had an experience, similar experience, much less long one. We did the Blair Mountain hike in West Virginia a few years ago, which was about 6 days, something like that. And it was really good because, you know, you could carry your own gear if you wanted. You know, we all camped out at different places, but they also had support. So will there be some support for, like, older people who can't carry their gear or whatever?
There will be. Yeah. So every 2 to 3 days, there's going to be a support van that meets up with hikers to charge up their technology. So we're going to be documenting the land and the people affected very well. So we're going to have cameras. We're going to have some kind of voice recorder. So all that will need to be charged. We're also going to be resupplying food and other supplies every few days for hikers.
So I just looked up to the screen for the first time. I noticed there is a caller, and I hadn't actually. This is a call-in show. Yes, if you were a first-time listener, this is actually talk radio, and the number is 503-231-8187. Apparently, we have a caller who already knows the number. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So thank you so much for bringing this up. I mean, I don't understand what these oil companies think we're going to eat, like, once they destroy everything with the drilling in the Arctic. I mean, it's like the last, I don't understand what the thinking is, but I guess I'm just like calling to just vent about it. So I don't know. Like, I am. So how is it going with, bringing folks together on the issues of the people who are currently working in different areas for climate activists?
Well, that's a bigger question, and I'm not sure Alex is necessarily the one to ask that question, but he can give it a shot. I mean, that's a bigger question than, you know, Alex was just talking about the people involved specifically in this liquefied natural gas involving this major facility planned at Coos Bay to liquefy and put it onto ships and ship it off. But there's also the pipeline, and then there's also the fracking, which brings the gas. So yeah, I mean, that's a tall order just on that issue alone. So anybody working on any of these individual issues has a large job in unifying people working on that issue or affected by that particular fossil fuel extraction, transport, distribution, et cetera. And then you've got all the other issues. And, you know, that's the dream of climate activists, anti-fossil fuel activists, whatever you want to call people who are doing this kind of work, is to be able to bring people together from all these different things. And it's a difficult task at best. Alex, you?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely difficult. But like you said earlier, there is an opportunity for people to capitalize on, and I hate to use that word in a discussion like this, but for us to take advantage of these universal and absolutely massive issues. And the reason I'm optimistic about the people's reaction to these issues is because I've seen unity between factions of Oregonians that I never would have thought would have talked about a political issue and been nodding their heads during the discussion. And this LNG issue, is as terrible as it is, it has allowed me to engage in conversations with conservatives, libertarians, anarchists, liberals, conservatives, everybody across the political spectrum. And we've all come to an agreement that public interest is what our government is for. And whether,
theoretically.
theoretically, right? And but we all hold to that theory of government. That's kind of what it means to be like proud of where you live, to be proud of like the idea of where you live. It never works out that way anywhere. But I think it's definitely worth fighting for, the idea of a government protecting the public interest. It's not always going to be perfect. It's not always going to be pleasing everyone. But if we can minimize the government in certain areas and hopefully bolster and strengthen it in other areas to address the issues that confront us, I see that as a conversation I could have with just about anybody. And I think that's a beautiful thing, being able to have those discussions and make those relationships with people I normally wouldn't.
Does that answer your question, James?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. I'm just, I guess it's just so beyond me. I mean,
Are you involved in any of these issues yourself?
I actually haven't been to anything lately because I've just been so busy with work. It's definitely important. I'm glad that there's people out there creating human. It sucks that it comes to people actually having to put themselves in bodily harm's way in order to keep the ship docked. But I mean, it's like people just. There's so many people that just aren't taking this seriously, and it just blows my mind that we can put the health and safety of the planet at risk just because people need jobs or we need more oil for whatever reason that we don't need it.
Yeah, well, that's the situation we're in, and we gotta confront it. So yeah, thanks for calling. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Have a great day.
All right, and looks like we have Patrick Mazza on the line as well. I think we've sort of gotten the basic idea. We're going to come back to Alex a little bit later and talk more about this, and also have some contact information, how people can actually plug in. I'm sure there's still room for people to join the hike and support it in other ways too, I imagine.
That is correct, definitely. Yeah.
So we'll just give people what's some contact information?
Sure. hikethepipe@gmail.com is a good email. You search Hike the Pipe, we're all over the front page of Google. So you can look at our Indiegogo page. We're currently fundraising for the hike. You can look at our Facebook page or our website and check out our YouTube video. There's plenty to plug into.
So you can also support it in many ways. As you said, there's an Indiegogo campaign for Hike the Pipe to support their efforts. All these efforts always need financial support as well. And Patrick, are you there?
I'm here, Paul.
Patrick, long time no here. How's it going? Old time.
It's going good.
Comrade.
You know, just down in town last weekend to do the paddle in front of the Feneca, and that was great. And I'm just so thrilled to see the people hanging off the St. John's Bridge and in the water in front of the thing.
So you were you involved with the Seattle actions a few weeks ago?
Yeah. I helped with them. Did some work on that as well. Kind of present at the creation of Kayaktivism.
Yeah. Just to give a little bit of history, Patrick and I used to work together on the Portland Alliance way back when it was still published, when it was a thriving, an important Cascadian editorial venture. And you have also, you've been involved in many efforts. You were like early on involved in climate activism with your website and some other things. Just talk a little bit about how you got involved in this stuff.
Well, a lot of it roots back in the Alliance days when we were both working on the forest issues. And it was becoming, we were cutting down these great old growth forests that are some of the world's great carbon sinks. And it was already becoming clear as the world was starting to heat up in the mid 80s that it was just crazy to cut down our great trees. And it's still crazy, now that their politicians are trying to do it again.
Yeah, the Northwest Forest.
So, you know, it was just clear that we, you know, we were just starting to go off the tracks and really setting up a terrible situation for our future. And unfortunately, we're now seeing it happen. You know, we're seeing the Northwest dry out. We're seeing wildfires, and we're seeing salmon die of overheated rivers. So, I mean, what we said was going to happen is happening now. So, desperately urgent, we really get at very deep carbon emissions reductions, more than the politicians are talking about, for sure.
Yeah, the politicians definitely are not generally leading on this issue. But so where did you? Tell us where your writing can be found before we get into this latest article.
Right now, my writing I post on Daily Coast as Pacific Shift, and I also do my Cascadia Planet blog, which is Cascadia Planet, one word, .blogspot.com.
Okay, and that's where this article was found. Washington Governor Inslee orders carbon cap as outcome of youth lawsuit. So this, you're framing this as a pretty historic decision. Just talk about how this all came down.
Well, what happened yesterday is Governor Jay Inslee of Washington ordered the Department of Ecology to begin a rulemaking to impose a mandatory cap on carbon emissions. He tried to do this in the legislature, but was frustrated by Republicans in the state Senate, who are really oil industry whores. And also, I mean, he was weak in his own among his own people. The Democrats certainly are not, you know, they're certainly, well, there's you know, there's some who are urban Democrats who are fairly strong on climate. A lot of the suburban and rural Democrats are kind of wishy-washy. So he was in a weak position. But at the same time, these eight youth were filing a petition with the state saying, we don't need any more laws to impose carbon limits. What we, you know, the constitution of the state says that there's a public trust doctrine, which, you know, the state is obligated to protect natural resources. So we've, you know, and the clean air laws say we need to keep the air clean. So we've got all the laws we need, you know, to do it just by regulatory process. And by the way, we need to go for science-based goals. So this comes out of work from Children's Trust, which is forwarding these kind of lawsuits all over the country. You know, the people who have the most at stake, the young people who will live with our follies for their lifetimes, are taking the governments to court, and so this lawsuit proceeded in Seattle. They petitioned the state, and the state said no, so they filed suit in Seattle. King County Superior Court, and the judge said, look, state government, you're already admitting your goals fall far short. You're admitting we're facing tremendous climate crisis. We're definitely seeing, you know, nature, our natural resources being impacted by climate change. Look at the kids' petition again. So what happened yesterday was the governor announced basically half of what the kids are asking for, which is a rulemaking, you know, which will take place over the next year, which will design a carbon cap for Washington State. So the governor picked up the legal theory developed by the lawyers and said, we have the legal power to do this. What the governor didn't do was adopt the kids' science-based goals. So this is where we're going to, over the next year, see the tension. The state adopted goals, non-binding goals, back in 2008, which roughly have us reducing carbon, which are a pretty thin, you know, we would only go down to 50% of our current carbon emissions by 2050, where we really need to get more in the 90% area. We would only be reducing, you know, at a pretty light rate in the early years. Well, we're as the science is saying, we really need now to be reducing at a global rate of 6% a year. And the calculations done for Washington State based on our contribution, the growth of our, the ability of our forests to sequester carbon, our relatively cleaner power base are 4% a year. So the difference between 2% a year and 4% a year for us, you know, basically if we go down, you know, just 2% a year, we're still going to be, the world will still be warming due to our emissions by 2500 and beyond. If we go down at 4% in Washington, 6% globally, we'll be back to climate stability by 2100.
But Patrick, let me just push back a little here. I mean, aren't things happening at a much faster rate than all this? I mean, realistically.
Things are happening at a really fast rate, and you know, I can't guarantee that 6% a year is enough, or that we will, you know, I mean, what we need to do is shoot for at least what the best science is telling us right now, and maybe we need, you know, maybe we need to go even for, you know, for you know, even more radical, deeper and immediate cuts. At least we need to, you know, I'm happy for, you know, for a politics which calls out, you know, which calls for the, you know, the most ambitious carbon reductions we need to make. I mean, it's, you know, I'm working right now with the science developed by Jim Hansen for this legal, you know, for the kids' lawsuit. And so maybe we need to go farther.
Well, the question, I mean, that it seems like that has finally been raised publicly by Naomi Klein, you know, in her book, This Changes Everything, is, you know, she calls out, you know, an economic system as the root cause, or, you know, the current major effective cause of what's going on. And that's still not really entering the public debate. We're still... This kind of thing is still the more traditional, like, regulatory framework approach to environmentalism, which has really failed us dramatically and continues to fail us. And so, I mean, it seems like the idea this changes everything is still not really, we're still not coming to grips with the message that Naomi has laid out for us, that we need to really call out the actual mechanisms of, sort of like, regulating the marketplace isn't really enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, really what we're going to face, you know, and here's exactly why there's a tension over the level of reductions. When you start to talk about, you know, reductions, you know, immediate reductions that, you know, of 4 to 6% a year, you're already talking about looking at some real fundamental pieces of the economic system, you know, so, I see it as exactly a way to draw out the discussion about, you know, if our economic system can't provide us with at least the minimal carbon reductions that are needed as called for by the best science we have right now. Well, what's the problem with our economic system? You know, and it's like, you know, I totally with you, Paul. We need to, you know, there's a whole, you know, I mean, one of the things that came out of the Washington legislative session was a transportation package, which builds new highways. And unfortunately, a lot of the mainstream, environmental community up here got swept into it because it also has transit funding in it, and the governor, you know, was supporting the increased highway construction. So here you have a little conflict, you know, that this assumption of, you know, growing traffic, you know,
we can continue to consume our cake and have it too.
Yeah, I think it is time to start some, you know, asking some fundamental questions about, you know, why we're here. And, you know, we've got this treadmill economic system where, you know, if people stop being consumers, you know, the whole, you know, the thing would collapse. So, you know, so we've got to ask ourselves, you know, what is the different economic system we need to go for? I'm definitely, you know, the assumption of growth economics has got to, we've got to have some reconsideration. I mean, there was a study which came out, it was just in recent weeks, which said, you know, most of the emissions reductions the United States has experienced in the last few years were as a result of the great recession of 2008. So it wasn't all this great fracked natural gas that, you know, that so many people claim is, you know, and that's questionable anyway, how much real emissions reduction is there. But no, it was actually people driving less and buying less. So I think there's, you know, I'm with some asking some really fundamental questions about, you know, I think, you know, Wendell Berry had the right question. What are people for? You know, what are we doing here?
Well, that's what we try to talk about here on Wednesday Talk Radio to the extent that we're able and the limits posed. But if you could hold on just a second, we do have another caller, I believe. Mm-hmm. Harry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. The first guest that you had was mentioning the pipeline.
Uh-huh.
And it seems that it's not cost effective. Why don't they go to California ports or their closer seaports than Coos Bay?
Well, I don't know if that's the fundamental question. I think the fundamental question is they shouldn't be piping it and they shouldn't be exporting it. They shouldn't be fracking it to begin with, personally.
Uh-huh. And the next question is our new governor. Well, can she put a stop to all this?
I think the question has been posed to Kate Brown, hasn't it?
It has. She hasn't come publicly for... She hasn't come publicly for or against the project. We discovered that Kitzhopper was actually in secret pushing for the Jordan Cove Energy Project when emails were released to the public.
Despite his girlfriend's professed green energy stance, which got him into so much trouble to begin with.
And that's exactly the problem. We're viewing natural gas as this alternative that can help us without acknowledging that natural gas is just another fossil fuel. And when you factor in the emissions when it's fracked and piped and transported across the biggest ocean in the world, we're looking at a net aggregate of a lot of carbon and a lot of methane leaking into the atmosphere.
Yeah, every one of those fracked gas wells leaks immense amounts of methane, not to mention the poisoned water, which in a, you know, reduced precipitation regime is criminal.
No, definitely. Unfortunately, our governor doesn't agree. She obviously doesn't agree because she would have come out and said so. She's, I think, consolidating her opinion, and that those are her words.
Uh-huh.
Her position. She's a politician. She's looking to be running in the next election, and she doesn't know what's politically salient and going to motivate people whichever way. So what we need to do is mobilize enough people to tell her that people on the left, people on the right, people all over will not tolerate a governor who doesn't look out for her own people. And that's what we need to communicate however we can to our politicians, especially to people like Kate Brown who do, despite their silence, these people do have power to do something about it.
So what do you think about it, Harry?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that I know how Kitzhopper thought about, he allowed all this stuff to happen, so I was hoping that Kate Brown would ship all this.
Well, one can hope and one can act.
Thank you for taking my call.
All right, thank you, Harry. What do they say is to trust is okay, but to be sure is, I don't know, there's an old Italian saying, I think there's a version in English too, but...
Trust but verify.
There you go. Trust but verify. That's the English version. Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, so much of the environmental community was just seduced into the natural gas hoax.
Yeah, NRDC and Environmental Defense Fund and all those people, yeah.
Sierra Club was getting big money from the natural gas industry, and they were all buying into this thing of natural gas as the bridge fuel, which is now pretty well, anybody who looks at the real science of this is saying, you know, that's pretty well not the case. And if you, as your other guest was saying, if you look at the methane emissions, which each molecule is like 30 times more potent than CO2, you're really getting something that could well be worse than coal. So, I think the Climate Progress website has been really good about calling out the gas industry and the major emissions at all stages.
So then we only have 10 minutes left. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I have Alex Harris in the studio, who's with Hike the Pipe, an effort to bring people together in Southern Oregon. Starting, when is that starting?
August 22nd through September 26th.
So about a month, and coming up in just a few weeks. And he's given some information. We'll give that contact information again. And we've also got Patrick Mazza, a longtime journalist and climate activist who's been involved with the kayaktivism in Seattle, and has been writing about it, and is writing about a move by Washington Governor Inslee to order a carbon cap. Now, that carbon cap, is that the first in a state?
It will be effectively the first. We've had, we had in 2008, a fairly weak Democratic governor and legislature gave us goals, which are not binding, which have no force in law, really. And so we have goals, but we don't have a binding carbon cap. So nobody really has to do anything to reduce their carbon emissions. This opens the door to actually putting some force of law behind carbon emissions reductions. That, we've really got to go though for carbon emissions reductions as the science says and not as the politics say.
So you're probably familiar with that decision.
Pretty deep.
You're probably familiar with the court decision in Denmark that happened a couple months ago also, right?
It was actually Netherlands. Netherlands, yeah. And that's part of this whole trend of, people basically suing governments to begin dealing with the realities of climate disruption. And that's, so that is one of the models of success so far. We've had a similar decision in Oregon, but a bad appeals court decision. So we're kind of, so that's still being fought in Oregon. So we're still, the whole effort is kind of stalled down your way, but we can keep going. It's time to do this at every level, from hanging off a bridge to pushing our politicians as hard as we can. I mean, we're in the crisis now. The Arctic ice is melting, the world is burning. I had an experience, Paul, of going back to visit my family, taking my daughter back to visit my family in the Philly area, driving west out of Philly and seeing a blood red sun, sunset. And I'm going, what is that? And it turned out it was smoke from the fires in northern Canada and Alaska blowing all the way across the continent. We're seeing global effects right now. I mean, we're in the crisis. And we need to behave like that.
So we got another caller. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to make a quick announcement about what's going down in St. John's with the Arctic icebreaker. If anyone is interested in learning how to get involved, best way, because things are changing pretty quickly, is to do a text message to 23559 and text the words the @ sign and then shell no PDX, and then you'll be updated. It sounds like things are going to, there's going to be another flotilla later on today, and that the police aren't going to do anything, hopefully, as long as the boat isn't going to move, as long as the folks are dangling from the bridges. So, and any volunteer support, food support, donations of kayaks is greatly appreciated.
Out to Cathedral Park under the St. John's Bridge. And again, that's text the number 23559 to @shellnopdx. Did I have that right?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate that.
Thanks so much. Take care.
All right. And a quick update there. So again, people are still out there at, under the St. John's Bridge, Cathedral Park. It's going to be a hot one. Maybe you could just take a dip. It's a nice spot out there. Some shade out there and nice water. Probably going to be heating up, but, you know, probably cooler than the air. It looks like we've got one more caller. Alan, you're on the air.
Well, thanks for taking my call this morning, Paul. I appreciate your show. Viable solutions. We are in kind of desperate straits, worldwide with all this going on. But I think, you know, occasionally you hear these little lights of viable solutions. One that I had heard about is, you have these huge ranches, raise cows and cattle and everything. You got all this cow dung, and they've been building, I guess, these digesters, I think. Portland PGE might have a pilot program going on down in Tillamook doing this, where, they create methane gas, I guess, in these digesters and then use it to, burn and create electricity. And they're actually powering, 10,000 homes or something like that. And so are there any other, projects like this? Like when you drive down I-5, before you get out to Bakersfield down there, it's huge cow ranch.
Well, I think we need to eliminate those huge feedlots and the whole industrial factory farming system, because they're extremely water intensive and they should have no place in a drought-ridden California. But, I think that's not a good solution there. But I have to let you go, actually, because we only have 2 minutes left and I have to close out. So thank you for calling. But that's something to put out there to other callers. And you can write me at paulrkaboo@gmail.com if you have any ideas like this or, conversations you want to start. So thank you for calling. And Patrick, we're going to have to let you go as well. Patrick Mazza from Seattle. Thanks
for having me on, Paul.
All right. And Alex, we pretty much got what you wanted to say, I think, about Hike the Pipe. Again, if you can give people the dates are August 22 to September 26th, and from where to where?
It'll be from Malin, which is just outside of Klamath Falls. We'll cross the Cascades, the Rogue, South Umpqua, Coquille and Coos Rivers, and eventually end up on the coast at Coos Bay.
And people can get involved in that through...
Plenty of opportunities to hike. There will be 4 community events that you can look up on our website, and there is ample opportunity to donate hiking materials or money to the cause.
And is there you said hikethepipe@gmail.com?
That's correct.
Is there a phone number?
Yeah, it's my phone number, 541-324-1343, and my name is Alexander Harris.
And I will be at the front desk after this show. You can feel free to call in to get this information, 503-231-8032 is that number. Well, that sounds like a great opportunity. So how many people do you think are going to be hiking at one time?
There's going to be about 3 to 5 people hiking at each time. There's going to be opportunities for people to march alongside hikers during certain sections. So at certain parts of the hike, there will probably be a few dozen people marching in protest for against the pipeline.
Or maybe 50 to 100 if more people get excited about this. Who knows?
If Oregonians, especially Portlanders and people from the north, take responsibility for what's going on, then yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Alex.
You're welcome.
Alex Harris with Hike the Pipe. And we had Patrick Mazza. We had updates from the Shell No campaign So the desperate fight to save our climate continues. My name is Paul Rowland. This has been Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
Is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.